Closet Otaku Show.
Milfuku.
Closet Otaku Show.
Trying to get that gold D.
Closet Otaku Show.
We just in the closet.
Closet Otaku Show. Your cheeks, my lips, they meet. We kiss. Suzaku. You're a bitch.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Closet Otaku. I'm your host, the genius with the songs, Kes.
I'm your boy, Brandon, Mr. Songless Boy.
And I'm Austin. I'm not clever enough to make songs, so we leave that to Kes.
He's just a scaredy cat.
I was going to say y'all are the boys with the thongs, and I'm the one with the songs.
Yeah, we definitely have that.
Silk thongs only.
So this week,
What's up, everybody?
Are you gonna interrupt me?
I wasn't really trying to, but you can go ahead.
No.
It was on accident.
You do it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What's going on, everybody? We're back with Code Geass episode 12. If you're just starting here on episode 12, you probably shouldn't. You should probably go start with episode 1, just because that's how, you know, we're going in order here. So if you have been listening to us, you know how it goes. We watched episode 12, and we're going to talk about it.
Pretty good advice right there.
Yeah, especially with this episode, because there's a lot of character development that happens in this episode and not a bunch of action. So this is one of those more important episodes where we're going to kind of see behind the scenes with both the JLF and the Britannians, right, on both sides. And we get a snippet of that at the very beginning. When the Britannian government, right, or their Britannians, right, they're having a meeting about this recent loss, and they're not too thrilled with the loss. I mean,
no, they're not pleased.
Yeah.
As you can imagine.
Think about it like this, right? Imagine during World War II, when Germany was just fucking everybody up, and they suffered that first loss. That must have been devastating. That's essentially what happened here. Britannia has went on this global conquest, or at least we think global, and they fucked up all these superpowers except China, because now we know in this episode that China is another major superpower.
MVP.
Yeah, MVP, right. And they've been decimating everyone. And then you come across a small country, which you've already conquered, and have a loss this catastrophic. How do you explain that? It's inexplainable, right? What do you guys think?
I mean,
well, go ahead, Austin.
I was just going to say, needless to say, the Britannians are going to remember the Battle of Narita for a long time. And it's definitely a blow to all of their military leaders' psyche. And Emperor is not happy.
This battle was also interesting too, because there was mixed reactions to it as well. So like one, I mean, Britannia did suffer a defeat in one instance, but another way that people were looking at it was the Japanese Liberation Front was decimated during this fight.
Oh yeah. They did get pretty wiped out.
So in one sense, this was a win for Britannia.
Not fully, but they suffered losses.
They suffered losses, but they still have the mountain. Right.
With the success, with the decimation of most of the Japanese Liberation Front, were specific notes from this episode. Most of them.
There's probably a lot that got killed, but the thing is, they're not eradicated.
Right? Not completely. But this was a big defeat for them. So, depending on how you look at it, this could be seen as a win for Britannia. That's why this battle is so interesting, because you have three different sides fighting, right? You have the Black Knights, whose main objective was to capture Cornelia.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Britannians, who were there to not only capture Zero, but also to fight the Japanese Liberation Front. So really, I mean, the only side that I think that really came out on top would be the Black Knights, right? But Britannia, you know, you could argue that, like, oh, hey, they got a little something out of it, too. The JLF, though, they didn't come out victorious at all.
Yeah, they didn't.
They survived some of them.
Get much of a victory. I mean, they could probably say, hey, Britannia suffered a loss, so that's a win. But otherwise, they lost quite a bit of their forces.
I guess true. Like you were saying, it is more of a win for the Black Knights rather than the JLF. But I would kind of consider this a win for the JLF as well, right? Because now, it obviously the Black Knights are going to come to their aid, right? So they're going to come to their aid based on what, right? Now, that's probably what they need to determine. So maybe they can join up with the Black Knights and become, like, under the Black Knights, right? Because
I don't think the JLF is going to work with the Black Knights at all, based off this episode.
Maybe,
I mean,
not.
It was probably a win for them just on a morale standpoint.
Because everything that we saw with, you know, within this episode and the mountain isn't ran by the JLF, from what we find out later on. It's owned by the Kyoto group, which, and they don't like the JLF.
But they,
so I really think this is the downhill story of the JLF.
No. The JLF doesn't own that mountain. They're not. No, right. You're talking about a different mountain. You're talking about.
Then that other mountain, they're done. JLF is done.
I disagree. But the mountain you're talking about is the.
I guess you didn't watch episode 12, dude.
I watched episode 12.
Then you would know.
No. You would know. That they're done?
They're done.
They're
they
not
suffered
done.
A major defeat.
I disagree.
It's
with
over
you.
With for the boys.
They're going to continue to pop back up. Just watch.
Okay.
They're we'll going to continue to pop back up.
Decimation.
Do you think it has like a strong force or just like...
No. I mean, yeah, I don't think they're maybe just be a has like little
force.
Bees.
No.
Like little needles, you know, like pricking at you. But I think the days of the JLF being something of, you know, like a household name, making big things happen, I think that's over with.
But that's
a bunch
not
of individual
I'm...
cells, you know?
But that's
yeah,
not what
I think
I'm
really
saying.
They're just going to be an annoyance, which means that the JLF as a group is pretty much over with.
I just...
Because the Japanese Liberation Front as a name, I mean, that was like the Japanese... That was their force that was fighting against Britannia.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to see this phased out now in the new era of the Black Knights come in. The JLF as we knew them isn't going to continue for much longer.
And this is how this I know you weren't end. Listening when I made my other point. It's like I was saying,
no,
I don't think they're going
to
continue.
You're not listening to me.
Yeah, you said they got
you
decimated.
You're not listening. That is decimated. If what they're able to do is completely has been destroyed within this episode, that I mean, that's decimated. They'll never be able to use the same force that they were before. I mean, this is the downhill spiral of the JLF.
But that is what's best for them, right? Because the JLF...
Best and whatnot, they were decimated.
They got decimated, right?
Right.
But I'll concede to that. They got decimated, right?
All right.
The thing is this was ultimately a win for the JLF, right? Because...
I don't think you can argue that.
Hold on, hear me out, right?
Just because it's a loss for Britannia.
Hear me out. Just because a
hold
friend
on,
of a friend
hold
won.
On. Hear me out.
Or an enemy.
Hold on.
An enemy.
Let me hold up the yellow flag. Hold on.
We'll let you cook.
Because the thing is, the JLF has been a force ever since Britannia conquered Japan, right? And what major moves have they done? Nothing. We find out during the previous episode that the Britannians knew that they were holed up in that mountain, but waited to attack. They were like, yeah, we've known about this stronghold for a long time, but, you know, I guess we're gonna attack now because the Black Knights are putting pressure. We need to start getting rid of these resistance groups, right? So what have they done? The Britannians knew they were there, right? They've put up little skirmishes here or there. The last major offensive the JLF did, right, was at the hotel. Which is
that
negative.
We've seen.
That we've seen, but the last major thing that they did. And before that, the last major thing, because we would have heard about it on the news up to this point, right? Or we would have heard some character talk about some major JLF plan, right? And the previous crazy thing before that, which was stealing the chemical weapons, the JLF couldn't even do that. It was this small resistance cell that had to do it. The JLF was just a bunch of old men sitting on their hands, right? This loss for them, and having a lot of their main force killed off, because they lost a lot of their BRIs, right? They lost like one or two of the experimental ones, right? Half of the mountain has crumbled down. It's going to be a win for them in the long run, because the JLF, as it was, wasn't doing anything. And if the JLF gets absorbed into the Black Knights, that's a win, because it's going to make the Black Knights, as they don't have a bunch of forces, so I get it, right?
While also being the complete decimation of the JLF, because if they're absorbed into the Black Knights, we're not going to be called that anymore.
I get
all
that.
I'm saying,
I'm not, but that's what I'm saying.
The JLF that we have seen up until
here
this
you
point
go
is going to be
you
gone.
Go. You're not listening. You cut me off.
You're not listening.
No. I said this was good for the JLF, not because the JLF is going to continue to exist, right? It's because in the long run, everyone who's a part of the JLF, if they get absorbed into the Black Knights, it's the best thing. It's the best thing for them. Because the JLF, as it was, wasn't doing anything except right. negative stuff.
They were losing quite a lot.
I don't know if
taking
it's the best thing
else
for them to get absorbed into the Black Knights, but I'm fine with us tabling that here.
I guess
so,
just
so that way
see
we can move on with the episode.
So, I mean, yeah, they're just going to lose their national identity and get absorbed into the Black Knights, which don't have a national identity. That's not what they're fighting for.
They're fighting for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The little people.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a dub. That's a win.
But that's kind of what you have
for
to
the
do,
Black Knights.
Right?
Yeah. Because otherwise, they're not going to be able to stand on their own as a group anymore.
And how many of these people are truly Japanese at this point?
Not many.
Right.
And it's not like they can recruit more.
No. Right. So, JLF got a dub right here. I love that we're having a contrary opinion about it, because if we just go along with what we say each time, it's going to be kind of boring. But
yeah, I mean, that's what this is all about. I definitely don't see it as a dub for them, but I can see how you all see it as that.
It's a win for the existing people. It's not a win for the group itself.
I think it depends on, you know, what happens in the future. Do they get absorbed into the Black Knights? What's going to happen? We don't know for sure yet.
Maybe they get decimated fully, right? And even so, if that's the case too, and the JLF gets decimated, it's not a win for them, but that is a win, right?
Because I think it's a win for the Black Knights. I mean, because to your point, they haven't done anything successful that we have seen. I mean, I feel like the JLF seems like a group that only made a name for themselves by doing just a lot of shit, not necessarily well. Like, not a whole bunch of wins. It's just like, oh, this group's annoying as fuck. Mm-hmm. They keep attacking us. It's not like they succeed every time. So,
and what they did at the hotel was so bad. It's one of those bad things that you do that people don't just forget, right? It's the same thing with, like, you know, Germany. When people think of Germany, I don't know what's going on in Germany currently, right? With their politics or their agriculture or whatever. But I can tell you what I do remember. World War I and World War II, right? And that's what I'm saying. People are going to have this negative stigma about them. You know, taking
and that
hotel.
The hotel conflict, I mean, that almost seemed like, you know, like an animal that had been cornered, and they were like, we have no clue what else to do, so this is our best idea. We are actually going to start taking people hostage now. We're going to be terrorists.
Fractured leadership. That one guy went off on his own and disobeyed mm-hmm. the other JLF commanders.
Well, I mean, you're going to have mutiny, especially with the losses that JLF has taken. And like you were saying, you've got this whole other group that's kind of just holed up in the mountain, not doing shit. And then, you know, another subset of people who were like, no, we're the JLF. We're supposed to be doing shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So why would we just sit in this mountain? We need to be killing Britannians.
As a liberation front, if you're just sitting around and you're not taking action, what are you trying to liberate?
Yeah,
but you're just holding on to the image of old Japan just as old men. I mean,
but
what
then,
are you fighting
I mean,
for?
But then you got these people creating the image of terrorists, and that's not how the JLF wants to be seen. I can tell you that. That's not how the leaders want it to be seen, you know?
Yeah, but which one's going to get stuff done?
So let's go ahead and...
True.
Let's go ahead and continue a little bit, because we're getting stuck on this.
All right, let's talk about Darlton.
Well, before we get there, right? So there's a few minor points I saw during this episode. Like one I mentioned, Britannia mentions there's a Chinese Federation, right? So Britannia is not present in China. So I'm wondering, and they describe this group as a major, you know, group, right? The Chinese Federation. So I wonder how big they are compared to Britannia. Because China, as we know it now, is massive, right? So I wonder if they're on equal footing with, you know, with Britannia, right? They don't go into all of that.
I'm not even fully sure how big Britannia is, if I'm being honest. Like, sometimes it's like, have they just taken over Japan or, like, you know, or have they taken over, like, a bunch of other places?
So the way it seems like they've been in Japan for a while, right? Because... remember, Suzaku's father was the minister of Japan, right? They came in, they killed him, right? And then they took over Japan. And we know in one of the previous episodes, they put a bunch of Britannians in there. So a bunch of the Japanese and Britannians would, you know, would intermingle and then have half Japanese, half Britannian children, right?
I believe it's been at least 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was like 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
I mean, because when Britannia invaded, Lelouch and Suzaku were both kids, and now they're teenagers. So
right,
7 to 10 years, I would say, they've at least been over there. Because the war, like, Britannia's invasion of Japan and the conquering of Japan did not take that long. It only took like 2-3 years.
Yeah, that's true. There's a few more small notes, right? Are you talking about the group of old men we see here in a second? Or is that what you were going to talk
for
about?
The JLF?
I'm talking about with Darlton. He brought up a point of self-governing 11s known as the NAC.
Mm, yes. Yep. Go ahead and continue on that.
The NAC is just a group of the self-governing 11s, and he suggests eliminating them, which Cornelia agrees to, but then she stops when she hears that it will hurt the economy if it happened. And I don't have like a lot of in-depth notes about this. It's a very interesting point, but doesn't really get much like screen time or discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that there are a group of self-governing 11s that Britannia allows to exist. And while they've, you know, been back and forth with the idea of getting rid of them, I guess from what they are saying, doing that is going to affect the economy in some way. I don't have all the notes on why it would, but this was just an interesting point.
I'll tell you why it would. The very next scene, we find out that, you know, one of the major ministers is a supporter of the Kyoto group, right? And it seems like, so we transition to like a smaller hut, right? Or like a Japanese style room. And there's a few old men in there. I think there's like 4 or 5. And
yeah,
they all appear to be either ministers or heads of corporations, right? And we'll come to find out one of them is the head of a corporation. So imagine...
They all look like businessmen to me, but...
Exactly. So imagine taking all these men. They know how to monetize Japan, right? Axing all these men, bringing in these Britannian capitalist pundits, LOL. And then seeing if they can profit off of Japan, right? It's gonna be a hard sell. It's going to be hard at least for the next 20 years, right?
And is this the scene where they're having like the conversation and like they say how... the front's like Pyrrhic victory means the death of the last true Japanese. Mm-hmm. Is this the same scene?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How they get into this?
Yep.
Because then there's like one girl and she's hiding behind a window pane. And then she claims that the Black Knights are also Japanese. And the men accuse her of having a crush on Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
That's the same scene.
So we get a little scene before this scene. It's really just mentioned that it's revealed that the few Black Knights who could not escape the Britannians during the fight chose to die rather than surrender. We also get to see that Jeremiah is on the dead list. And those of y'all who don't remember, Jeremiah is the long-running, you know, sort of sob story from Britannia. The guy who got tricked into allowing Suzaku to go free was Zero, so
still he's has a chip on his shoulder.
Dead. Supposedly dead. Even though we saw him shamble out of the battle, remember?
Yeah, so either he's alive and they don't know it or something after that. I bet old boy's still alive, well, running around crazy.
He's alive.
Oh, for sure.
Remember, he runs out into traffic. All yeah. crazy and stuff. So he's definitely
unless he
alive.
Got hit, you know.
No.
You gotta be careful when you're playing in traffic.
Off-screen death, I don't know.
Yeah. But
he's definitely alive, but here, you know, he's on the dead list, so mm-hmm. Britannians think he's dead, at least.
You know
but
what's
us as
cool?
the viewer.
I love how, in a previous episode, we were speculating on, you know, the breadth of the Kyoto group, right? And this episode relegated all of our theories nil.
Oh, yeah.
And Kyoto group is literally a small makeshift group of Japanese citizens that are businessmen, right? And they, you know, they even say, hey, we spent a bunch of our resources on developing the, what's the mech called? The Gurren Mark II.
The Guilt Thunder.
You're right.
Right. So they spent they spent a lot of resources on the Gurren Mark II. They were like, you know, and look what they did with it. Well, that was to your point. I think it was Yukes that said, are we sure they have a lot of resources? And it turns out they don't.
I will say that was me.
Oh, that was you, Austin.
I believe.
So credit where credit is due.
Because I think that's what started the conversation.
But that's an interesting thing to see is like this you know resistance or this Kyoto group isn't made up of like Chinese Federation, American Federation, or what have you, right?
Yeah.
It's just the Japanese Federation, right? Or the Japanese citizens.
They did it themselves.
But what seems to be like an elite cast of the Japanese citizenship.
Super elite. Of course, it's the elite, right? Mm-hmm. Always got to be the elite.
As usual. I mean, they're the ones that are going to have enough resources to make it in any kind of cataclysmic situation like an invasion or what have you, you know?
I want to take note of that girl that we see because we're going to see her again. Later in the episode, in like a brief scene, right? So just keep note of her, the one that's they said, oh, you're just like Zero, mm-hmm. right? We're going to see her later on. Now, after this, right, after we see Kyoto Group, we see all the good shit. Now, of course, we got to transition to some slice of life stuff.
You got to have that academy life, man.
Oh, yeah.
I will say this is my least favorite part of the show.
Oh, the academy?
The academy life?
Yeah.
And I also want to preface that with, I like a good slice of life, right? But I don't like the slice of life moments in Code Geass. Just because it really feels like I'm being removed from all the best parts of what makes the show. And then I'm being thrown character development from, you know, people like Shirley and like who I don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
Now
that's just my opinion at this moment.
You know what I will say, though, about this? Because we kind of see this kind of same thing in, there's another anime, not similar-ish to Code Geass. It's like Full Metal Jacket or something.
Oh, Full Metal Alchemist?
No, not Full Metal Alchemist. Do you know what? Full Metal Panic, right?
Mm.
To where you have those two sides of it. You have, there's a soldier paired with this girl. You have the school side, and then you have the, you know, espionage side, right? I think at least in
any Troll of Cold Steel game right there.
Yeah, right. I think at least in this instance, it's interesting to see because we get to see all the dire consequences that Britannians or Black Knights or the JLF, their actions have upon people. And then we transition to these menial scenes where these Britannian students are just kind of living life, living it up, and mm-hmm. have no fucking idea what's going on, right?
It's just like, it's always the same thing. Oh, Lelouch, he's so cute. What's Lelouch doing? He seems tired. Is he busy? Does he have a girlfriend? Like, it's the same slice of life segment every time.
But I think that's what's so interesting about it and why they put it in there, right? It's because the worries It's kind of similar to what we might see in our life, right? Our worries that we might have aren't going to be the same worries that our government people have, right? Or people, individuals.
It's definitely a good contrast.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Like what, and a good way of showing, you know, this is Lelouch and this is Zero.
Exactly.
And now we're dealing with pretty much two different people.
Yeah, they're separate lives.
Oh, for sure.
The facade that Lelouch puts on is nowhere close to, you know, who he is when he's Zero. But I will say the best slice of life moment that we've gotten so far was when we were on the train
mm-hmm.
headed towards the hotel where we met the JLF for the first time doing their crazy stuff. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
True. So, of course, we got to talk about this. Shirley's in love with Lulu. We already knew that, right? What's the blonde hair chick's name?
I think Millie. Nina.
Nina, or whatever.
No, right? Nina is the is the Nina the hair. One with the glasses?
Yeah, she's the crybaby one.
Oh, okay, crybaby okay.
one. She's the one that's in love with Yuffie. Is that her name?
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's right. Girl? Okay, then it's Millie is the blonde one.
So, okay.
I just have names. I don't have descriptions. So
she'll probably be important later, right? But whatever. We see that she's like, go ahead and confess to Lulu, right?
Yeah.
Tell him how much you love him.
You know, the crazy thing is we're 12 going on 13 episodes in, and she hasn't been important yet.
Yeah, but...
So, not that she won't be important. I just think that it's interesting. You know, 12 episodes into an anime, we're pretty deep. You know, we're halfway through the first season at this point, and there's a lot of people who've been constantly showing up who just...
Are there.
Don't really seem to matter.
Yeah, but I think especially in Code Geass in particular, a lot of these people are going to matter. It's just a matter of when will they matter, right? So it's like take note of them. It's kind of like One Piece in that instance, right? You might see a character in episode 80, and then you're like, oh, okay, he's not going to matter, right? Or the guy in episode 1 with the pink hair, right? Do you know who I'm talking about, Kes?
Who with the pink hair?
The little boy in One Piece with the pink hair.
Oh, Kobe.
And then all of a sudden you see Kobe in like episode 300, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's kind of the same thing here to where these characters, they don't really mean shit now, but that you see a lot of them and all of a sudden they mean shit, right?
Hey, I mean, and that's why we're watching it all. We'll see for sure. It's just interesting to me.
So let's skip past this part. Lelouch comes in, blah, 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 you know. After this scene, though, we see C2 struggling with her feelings, it looks like, and it looks like she's talking to someone, right? And on the roof, there is a guy, like, clearly dressed eccentrically that has headphones. Did you all catch that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who the fuck is that? And it seems like C2 is talking to him.
I don't got a guess. I don't know. I don't think we got enough info for me to start throwing names out.
Another conspirator joins the group.
I wonder. here's the crazy thing, right? So obviously, what's her name? She saw C2.
Right? Callan.
Callan, right? She saw Callan. C2, right?
All kinds of names.
All kinds of names. And. You know, she hasn't really got to interact with C2 or talk to C2. The person that really only interacts with C2 is Lelouch.
Right.
So now to see
it. Wasn't it up until last episode that no one had even met C2?
Yeah. Nonnally has been in her presence but not known.
Right.
You know.
So, yeah.
But
good old blindness.
Now we see her transition from nobody knows her except Lelouch. To where all of a sudden she's got a friend she's calling on the phone.
Mm. Do you think this guy is Britannian?
He's got blonde hair.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, with the blonde hair, he's not Japanese.
Yeah, he's definitely Japanese.
Not Chinese.
You know, the mixed-race individuals generally have like some different hair color, like pink. Or blue. You know what I'm saying? Like, not black hair, not blonde hair. I mean, there's individuals who do have different color hair, too. But I don't know. And we've just now got to see a deeper side of C2 as well within the last two episodes leading up to this. So now this has just opened up more questions around her.
Yeah, it last episode gave us a bit more about her, revealed a bit more about her personally, but then now we just get some more mystery again. So
it is just crazy how they, I mean, it is smart of them to throw this guy in here out of nowhere. We haven't even heard anybody of his description, right? We haven't even seen C2 talk about knowing anybody else. She hasn't really talked about her past at all. We saw her past in brief scenes, and I bet if we go in those brief scenes, like the flashbacks that Lulu saw, I bet we might be able to spot this dude, albeit in a more normal attire, because the clothing that they were wearing during that time is like Home on the Prairie type shit,
right?
Whereas the clothing they're wearing now is like almost cyberpunk-esque.
Right? Yeah.
And that makes me wonder, how long was she trapped in her capsule, you know, when she was rescued inadvertently by Lelouch, to where she's able to have like these relationships?
Because
the majority of the time she's saving Zero's ass. So like, where is she finding the time to develop other relationships with individuals other than Lelouch? Because we haven't seen her interact with anybody but him.
So it has to be an existing relationship.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why my biggest question is how long was she contained by Britannia? Was that only to transport her? Had she been contained for a while? That's what I'm starting to wonder now. Did this individual... Does he know about C2's past? Does he know who C2 is? Or is she just talking to him as, you know, just whoever her person is, and he doesn't know about her powers? I mean, we don't know any of this. If he knows her secret identity, who or what she is, like, we don't know that. We just know that she's talking to somebody.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, to me personally, it's either one of two things. He's either probably a Britannian contact that... she either established when she was captured, or somebody she knew from way back when who's also immortal, or knew her originally.
Do you all think, and this is my last question around it here, but do you all think that she is doing it for the benefit of the Black Knights and Zero, or behind Zero's back to their detriment?
She's definitely doing it behind his back. I don't know if it's... I doubt it's to their detriment, because she needs Zero to succeed.
And the only reason I brought up that question is she does a lot of stuff behind Lelouch's back, mainly in the form of when she shows up to save his ass when his plans go wrong. Because every time she does, he's like, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. It was, you know what I'm saying? That wasn't a part of his plan. So we've seen her go behind his back kind of constantly through the show, but it's always been to keep him safe.
Right.
So
here's the thing about
at this point, I feel like she's doing it for him. But
here's the thing about C2. That's exactly what I was gonna say. Is that C2 sees when Lelouch is making a dumb decision and will voice her opinion once. And Lelouch will go do it, and then she'll do whatever she needs to do on her end to make sure that he succeeds or survives.
Well, right. C2 appears to be the only individual that is as smart as Lelouch, which would then make her the only character capable of calling him out on his dumb decisions. Because everybody else either doesn't even know that he's got two identities, or is 2, 3, 4 steps behind him all the time.
Or an enemy.
Right. Like Cornelia.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll find a little bit more out about C2 in this episode. Not about this dude. We get one scene with this dude, so
we'll find out in season 2.
Let's jump through a bunch of these slice of life points. Shirley asks Lulu for a concert.
Tickets.
Yeah, she gives him. She says, "Hey, I got tickets to a concert. You want to go?" Before he can reject her, or think he says yes. Who cares? Then they run off. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he's. I will say this small point. I don't want to stick too long on it. For someone who's being hailed by himself and others as a military genius, he's pretty stupid that he can't realize Shirley's trying to ask him out on a date. But, of course, they had to add that trope in there, right? So I'm not upset about it.
I mean, typically people with high tactical IQs or other words like book smarts, they don't have a lot of common sense, you know.
This is something that I find funny and I think is well done in the show.
Go ahead.
My bad, Austin.
No, that was it.
Did you finish what you were? Okay. But he's thinking the entire time while he's there about, like, is Shirley in love with him? What's going on? Like, everybody's discussing the battle. He's in, like, his Zero attire. And he's thinking about, like, Shirley asking him out. And I do like that incorporation of the slice of life. Like, so they're here. You know, he's supposed to be this all-knowing commander, the one that's leading them to victory. And while they're all discussing, like, different tactics and, like, what was going on in the battle, he's like, what should I do with this chick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, Austin, right? Typically, not always, right? But in some instances, people with higher IQs or smarter individuals are unknowing about romantic interest, right? I get it, right?
It's just the trope, you know?
Yeah. Let's get past this. There's one scene I want to comment on. We have another scene after this where we see Nina, and I hate her. All right, next scene.
I mean, you already know.
No, we need to talk about this scene. Nina.
It's on site.
I hate Nina. Okay, well, let's talk
about
it.
Know what she was doing, right?
She was, I think she was getting flappy-dappy.
She was masturbating.
Yeah.
She was a photo of Euphemia.
I mean, yeah. who hasn't?
He's like, 11s.
I can't put a finger down. I got to keep my finger up. But,
Yuffie, 11s.
This was wild me that they threw this in here.
I guess it's to show her obsessive tendencies.
Nina is a weirdo.
Yeah.
She sucks. I hate her.
And I hope that they use her later. And that she becomes a villain.
A villain?
She's in love with Euphemia, and I mean, Zero is set to destroy Britannia. She's not going to side with him.
Oh, I mean, you're right. I already know, like, the second it comes to it, she'll sell out Lelouch. She'll sell out anybody to get closer to...
Would she not side with Zero, though?
Why would she?
I don't think so.
Because
Euphemia saved her. She says Euphemia saved her, not the Zero saved
her. So her loyalty is to Britannia, if Yuffie's loyalty is with Britannia.
But remember the interaction with Yuffie and Zero in the hotel? You know, Zero and her had a small conversation, right, about Clovis's death, right? And I can't remember the other topic, right? But Yuffie, rather than just calling him a liar or saying it's all lies like Clovis did, right? He didn't have to use the power of the king on her. She started thinking about it. And I think she drew a conclusion. That's right, because he said something that made her think that, you know, this could be Lelouch, right? I can't remember what it was, about the assassination of his mother or something. I'll have to go back and see it, and we'll talk about it next episode, but Yuffie sat and thought about it. She didn't automatically reject it. So there's a very real possibility that Yuffie might be on Zero's side at some point.
Oh, yes. I do believe that if Yuffie follows Zero, that Nina would stick with Yuffie. Right. But if we're just talking about Nina here, all we've seen is this obsessive Japanese 11-hating individual.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, because hating might be a strong word, but like...
Fearing, at least.
The way that she's scared of them, I do believe that fear and, you know, just, you know, her mannerisms, I think that's going to turn into hate at some point.
Mm, yeah, for sure.
It's like they say, fear leads to hate, okay?
The dark side.
Yeah.
Really.
Exactly. Hopefully she has an awakening, though. You know, maybe, I don't know. But
I hate this character. I don't know.
I hate Nina.
Seems like she's already had an awakening. Am I right?
Oh, Suzaku is like a trash can, but I think I can't. I despise Nina. So next scene.
You think she had any like post-nut regret?
No.
No.
She was probably she went
for round two, for sure.
Yeah. So
it was wild that they threw it in there. This was that scene.
Also,
well, you would think like, why? Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just remembered something, and I think I have it in my notes. Wasn't it a picture of Yuffie playing with children as well?
Yes, 100%. She was specifically playing with children. Now, this is the one thing. Was she masturbating to the photo because this is the only photo that she has of Euphemia? Or was she masturbating because she was specifically playing with children? And that is the question that I want to ask the producers or the writers.
I'll give her the benefit of the doubt on this episode.
This is way outside the anime at this point, but I'm very curious.
Let's give her the benefit of the doubt on that one, but I just wanted to bring that up.
I'm going to go ahead.
That's a super good point.
Nip that in the bud right there. That's where this conversation stops.
This episode's wild, though.
And we're going to move on to the next point. I don't want to talk about that anymore. So, basically...
Brandon's trying to silence us, so you guys should go watch it for yourself. You know?
Yeah.
I'm definitely silencing that conversation.
For a Patreon donation, we'll bring it up again. We'll get into the deep lore and discussion.
Yeah, you can find Austin
will masturbate
live on
to the photo.
Truth Social.
Yeah. So, anyway, we transition to the Resistance, right? Or the Black Knights. And here we go again. Despite all their victories, a couple people in the group are not happy about Zero being the leader.
Yeah,
you know,
for some reason.
And they even hype up, you know, your one boy who's been with them since the beginning. He's like, you know, you are being groomed to be the next leader of the Resistance. Shut up and you, right?
I'm sick of this.
Yeah.
I'm sick of this conversation about is Zero the good leader because he won't show his face, because we've done this.
Oh, yeah.
Like four times now where he's like, if you don't want me to be, then kill me. And nobody does shit. We need to drop it at this point.
It's that same guy. It's that same weasel.
Yeah.
Who keeps bringing up
conversation. Get this fucker out of here, man.
Remember, and he was the one last episode that was spending all the funds on the recruits.
He's a weak link.
So they were low on money. He is the weak link, right? Hopefully he gets killed off. I don't want anybody to die, but this is
Zero
a cartoon
needs
character.
To replace his ass. He's like, no, I'm the leader here. This is the part where I'm like, Lelouch really needs to like say no. Instead of this like, oh, if you don't want me to be your leader, kill me. I'm your leader. Get in line. This dude's out, you know?
Sometimes some authoritarianism is necessary, okay?
Right. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think it would work in this case, because look how much sway he has over the rest of the group. If Lelouch ousted him, the rest of the group wouldn't follow him, right? He's like an integral part of that group, because he's able to sow dissent into everyone. Even Callan is starting to have doubts because this motherfucker won't shut up, right? And I don't know.
Is crazy, just the, you know, how one man can sow all of these feelings into, you know, a group of individuals here, especially with the accolades that Zero has brought for the Black Knights
and for
Japanese people in the area. You would think that people would be like, look at what we have accomplished, but no.
Well, you know, time and relationship means a lot to people. So since they've been with what's his name for so long.
It ain't even that. This dude, right? He's jealous. Right?
Oh, of course.
He's jealous that he couldn't lead, right? Because he even said, like, in the previous episode, I should be the leader, right? And he's jealous that he can't be the leader. He's jealous that before Zero got there, they were losing and they were getting
emphasis
all their new
on
recruits
can't.
Killed, right? He's jealous that Zero got them all this new equipment. He's jealous that, you know, prior to Zero, they were broke asses, and now they're all of a sudden, you know, going about town, well-to-do individuals, splurging
famous
on big dinners, right? He wouldn't have been able to do that without Zero, right? And I even wrote this here. I get that his identity is important, but don't bite the hand that feeds, right? Especially in this instance, right?
But we've said this time and time and again. Don't bite the hands. I think you've said that. Mm-hmm. Multiple times through the course of us going through this journey here.
It's the same bastard. I don't even want to talk anymore about him. But every episode, I feel like he's got a new gripe And then, like, Callan called him out last episode, thank God, where she was like, you're spending all of our, or not last episode, but two episodes ago, where she was like, you're the one spending all of our budget on these big dinners. And he was like, not me.
And then what's his name? Does Callan?
Is that right? Augie? Is that his name?
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's got to be some like ugly like that.
Because there's Augie and to replace Tamaki with Augie. So I think Tamaki may be his name.
Okay.
Because I have notes that Zero decided to replace Tamaki with Augie, which Tamaki objects to. Zero says that if he wants to be treasurer, he needs good results.
Okay. Yep. Tamaki.
Mm-hmm.
And then Callan, once again, I mean, honestly, sometimes it's almost like that they don't feel like writing new stuff. Because once again, Callan is like, look, everybody, it doesn't matter who Zero is since he's on our side. I mean, how many times have we discussed this? Because it really feels like we're beating a dead horse on this topic.
At least
now.
Twice.
Yeah. I guess let's jump from this, right? Because we can talk about this forever. A few hits, because we're going to get to some big hitters here, and we've already been on here for a long time. So we jump to the next episode. Lulu sees Nonnally. She was pretending to be sick because he's acting distant and she wants to spend time with him. So, you know, I mean, of course, we're going to see a change in Lelouch over the 13 episodes with the Power of the King, because the Power of the King, maybe that's not all of his influence, right? That, like, maybe there's something else being influential over his mind, but we don't know that yet.
Well, and just the act of actually being in real combat is going to change a person anyways.
For sure.
Exactly. So, transition from there, that's a minor scene. We see that C2 might be jealous of Lelouch's date with Shirley? Question mark?
She seems a little, I don't know, hesitant about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and is it jealousy or does she not trust Shirley? That I'm not too sure about.
There we go. Right. Something to take. It's a minor thing here, but something to take note of.
Because C2 just seems to be beyond romance to me. I don't know. Maybe she's not, right? Mm-hmm. But just everything that we've seen, it doesn't really seem to be like Lelouch, she's about the goal.
Or True. She feels she has like a deeper connection to Lelouch.
Or that. Yeah.
True. Next quick hit. This is kind of an important quick hit that we will definitely touch on later episode. Shirley is going to Narita. What is she going there for, I wonder?
Interesting. So,
and, you know, I want to talk. We're going to spend a lot of time on this later, so I kind of want to get through the rest of it. But this is take note of this for later on in the episode. Now we go to Suzaku. We got to spend a little bit of time talking about Suzaku, right? He's back to his normal self. Of course, those memories really affected him. I mean, we see him sitting on, you know, the doctor's table or wherever he's sitting, and he sees those flashbacks, right? And I don't want to be the, you know, beat a dead horse here, but we hear Suzaku yet again talk about his sense of justice, right? And he needs to achieve justice and all this, even though in the previous battle, he murdered all those 11s. he is despicable. His character is vile. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Like, I get it, but man.
Suzaku's the type of guy who it's pretty much just like, hey, when I do it, it's for okay. justice.
Right.
And when other people do it, they're murderers and they're bad people and they're not doing it the right way.
Right. He's somehow claiming the Black Knights.
Suzaku's way or the highway.
The
right.
Black Knights aren't serving justice. I mean, they're serving more of a justice than he is.
Yeah. I mean, but make no mistake, they're not advertising themselves and telling themselves internally, you know, hey, we're the good guy, right? I don't want to kill anybody, right? Suzaku's thing is about justice. He says he doesn't want to kill anybody and yet has dozens of body bags under his belt. You see what I'm saying?
And I think that's almost scarier, is to have someone who believes that they're doing something purely because that their form of justice is the right way. I mean, because Zero doesn't I mean, he preached a little bit about, like, we'll take out anyone who's doing wrong stuff. But, like, at the end of the day, like, it's not about justice. It's about destroying Britannia.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, if that's justice to you, then cool. But it doesn't matter about justice. I mean, we're just taking these guys down.
Mm-hmm.
But when you got someone who really believes, like, that they're doing the right thing or, you know, the best thing for everybody.
Right.
I don't know. Suzaku's
his zealotry is, like, weirdly misplaced in Britannia. I don't know.
You know,
it's so strange.
And he's got no one to call him out on it. You know, that's the other thing. Because when he's in battle, he's surrounded by other Britannians, so they're going to push this mindset. And it's not like him and Lelouch get to spend much time together because he's out playing Zero and he's out playing superhero White Knight Soldier Boy.
And the Britannians hate him. The Britannians hate him. They didn't even want to send him out into battle because they
were like, he's still an 11.
You're going to claim the glory as an 11, right?
Everyone that he wants to fight for despises him, despises his entire heritage.
Yeah.
They killed his father.
I don't know, man. But you know what's crazy, though? Because we keep jumping back to that scene with his father, and I don't want to spend too much time on it. We already spent a lot of time in previous episode, right? But he's got this twisted sense of justice, right? To where I need to slaughter my own people to achieve, you know, justice and achieve unity with Britannia, because which is what we ultimately need, right? As we'll see later on, he was definitely going against his father, right? This isn't his father wanted Japan to be independent.
Definitely. Right?
I mean, we haven't even seen a flashback of his father, and I can kind of already tell you that's what it was, right? We'll get into that a little bit later about his father and his family and stuff later on in this episode, but it's just gross. Like you were saying, Kes, and you were saying, Austin, it's gross to see Suzaku claim all this sense of justice, right? And he's a murderer, right? And in his head, he doesn't even know that he's a murderer, right?
Oh, no.
He's the White Knight. I'm the police of this world, right?
Because so if he acknowledges that he's a murderer or somehow thinks he's doing the wrong thing, then what's his whole life been for up to this point? What's his beliefs been for up to this point? It would break him even more, just like seeing those memories from his father.
Yep.
And, you know, for me, I think that if he was just saying, like, I believe that, you know, Britannia is right, you know, and I'm going to enforce what they want upon the world, I would respect that more. But with Suzaku, it's no, I disagree with Britannia and what they are doing, and I am going to try to change them from the inside by being their murderous lapdog.
Like a lackey. Yeah, exactly.
A lackey.
That's like, what I don't get. About? If he didn't say all of that and he was just like, I support Britannia and I'm going to fight for him, respect. Because at that point, you're just picking a side, right?
Right.
But it's this, I'm going to change them. I'm really for the Japanese, like, as you kill all your Japanese brethren. What the hell?
What are you reforming?
Yeah. He hasn't reformed anything yet. He's just a dude who's got a nice mech suit at this point.
Right.
Yeah, Suzaku. I mean, we're going to slowly see his personality shift throughout the series, but, you know, it's his white knighthood, man. It's definitely a curse, right? We even see this in real life, right? These white knights. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I know you all are probably familiar. So if you don't suffer from white knighthood, if you do, call 1-800-WHITE-KNIGHT. We'll help you.
Please burn your fedoras.
And then I actually have a question for you all because, and this goes along with where we're at. It happens right after Suzaku notices Shirley. But he kind of like shrugs it off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get into talking about how. Dang, I closed my note. And now I can't find it, of course.
Well, here, look for that. I have something on the same scene. So we see that the professor pops up, right? And he's talking about how well the Lancelot performed. And he's talking about the Gurren Mark II. And he was like, it was able to shred the Lancelot shields. If Suzaku hadn't got out in time, right? Or if he had let it touch him, it would have destroyed the Lancelot, right? And, you know, the scientist, he remarks on, he was like, so she's working with them, is she? And then we see a picture of this blonde scientist, right? Who is probably as much as equal of a genius as he is, right? Or is his equal and is working for Kyoto, it seems, right?
And is this the individual named Rakshata Chawla?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know they said her name, but yeah, that her. Yeah.
Okay, because my note was Cecil confirms to Lloyd that there was a giant shockwave that resounded through the Lancelot and believe it was the doing of Rakshata Chawla. And my question was going to be to you all, do you all remember who this person was? But I bet it's the scientist.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
I think it's her, the photo. Mm-hmm. Because she is, yeah, she's definitely working for Kyoto. And he says, is she working for, like, the Black Knights? Because I don't think they know of Kyoto for real, right?
Yeah, they seem to be a little bit more.
At least they haven't mentioned them.
They haven't mentioned them.
Not by name.
Interesting. So it's not that they're so advanced, right?
This particular scientist.
Mm-hmm. They have another genius.
Which,
right?
Do you guys think, because Lloyd knows her, she's also Britannian?
Maybe she
came from defected. The same research group.
I don't know, because she's shown to be darker skin in her photo, right? So true. Maybe she's from, like, India, right? Because Rakshata,
you know
what I'm saying? That's not...
I will say that it sounds like Lloyd respects her as a genius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. He says she defected, right? So maybe she has to be from, like, the Indian front, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because her name, because, you know, the Britannians typically, Lloyd, right?
Yeah.
Clovis.
Very traditional European, northern European
sounding, right?
Yeah.
You know, so she's got to be from another front where Britannia conquered. And maybe they're like, hey.
Maybe part of the Chinese coalition. If India is
Chinese
a part
Federation,
of the Chinese
you think?
Or Chinese Federation, yeah. Possibly, because
maybe. India's
right next to China, or they could at least be allies.
And maybe she was a double agent.
Oh.
You know?
That'd be cool.
I don't know. We can speculate on her. We don't know a single thing about her.
No.
We can talk about her all episode.
but smart and respected.
Mm-hmm. Now, we see after this, right? Like you said, and an important point you mentioned, Kes. Suzaku sees Shirley, right? For a brief moment. Like, why is she here? But remember, we mentioned she was going to Naruto, so, you know, keep that feather in your cap, because we're going to need to talk about that in a little bit. So, we're transitioning to the meeting with Kyoto, right? And this is what I was telling you earlier. It's a different mountain. I couldn't remember the name. It's Mount Fuji.
Mount Fuji. Yep. Yeah.
It's Mount Fuji that it's in.
Different location.
And they say this is why Britannia came there in the first place, right? This is why they conquered Japan. There's a mineral in that mountain that they need. Do you remember
the name? I love
this
bit of information, too.
Do you remember the name?
The mineral? Mountain?
Yeah, I didn't write it down. I guess it's not important.
Yeah, the only note I have is that it was turned into a mining facility that was seemingly the entire purpose of Britannia's invasion.
Mm-hmm. Which now...
So I bet it was just resources in general, maybe, if they didn't mention, like, a specific name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe,
it's
like, gold.
It's a specific mineral. I don't think it's gold, but they said it's a specific mineral that they need, right? So, I mean, you know, like us, where we go to war over, you know, oil and stuff, it's kind of probably something like that.
Yeah.
So... But like you said, Kes, I'm glad that they mentioned that, because it's, you gotta wonder, why is Britannia just conquering these places, right? But
other
for
than
resources,
world domination.
Exactly. But for resources, it makes sense, right?
For sure.
So they go in, they have this meeting with Kyoto, right? And it looks pretty advanced. Now, this is the minister, right? And we know that he is working with Britannia, and they don't really know that he is a part of Kyoto, right?
Mm-hmm.
They go in and they see this man. He won't show his face, And he's surrounded by armed guards.
Yeah, right? He's veiled.
Veiled, yep. You're so he's veiled like a villain. So of course that he comes in and
I've got the name of the mineral. I don't know if it was mentioned in the episode, so we can keep it a secret or we can talk about it now.
What is it? Yeah,
Sakuradite.
Sakuradite. Okay, maybe
I looked it up.
Maybe that Sakuradite is what makes up the Lancelot's core.
Oh, that
you either know? That or it's like what makes their mechs stronger. Move. Because remember at the Power. Like when Britannia first conquered Japan, it was only Britannia that really had the mechs. Right. And that's why the war was so like one-sided as it was and they got conquered so easily. So maybe they wanted more mechs or I don't know. Yeah, it probably for a lot of things, really.
Yeah, maybe it's like a kind of like coal, you know, for energy and stuff. But thank you for that, for Sakuradite. So Kyoto, they want to see Zero's face because they suspect that he's not Japanese, right? Which is a big thing to them. I mean, the JLF, Japanese Liberation Front, they want the liberation of Japan. They don't really care about the Britannians, right? So they want to see, he wants to see his face. And they pull out beer eyes and they hold them all at gunpoint, right? And they're like...
Which, this was a funny moment because the way... The Kyoto director said it. He was like, I'll show you my face if you show me your face.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But then he immediately sent out all his people and was like, nah, show me your face.
Plus right he now. Move.
Mm-hmm. Come on. And even Ogi, right? Ogi admits he was like, you know, I have to see who you are. Right. I have to see who you are. And you know what? Ogi, up to this point, I can't even shit on him compared to the other dude because Ogi has been nothing but loyal. He never questions his authority, right? He does what he's supposed to. And honestly, without Ogi at the beginning, the resistance might have crumbled because he kept a lot of people together at the beginning when they were going to leave in episode 2. And, you know, they were like, we can't fight. And he was like, well, what are we fighting for? You know, Zero's giving us a chance. So, different from the other guy, I kind of feel Ogi here because, you know, he was supposed to be the other leader. He conceded the leadership to Zero. And, I mean, he wants a little something in return for being an unquestioning, staunch follower because he doesn't even question like Colin does.
That's
Ogi
fair.
Doesn't say shit, right? He just thinks it and just leaves it alone. He's been quiet the entire time. So
and this is I the problem that Lelouch is going to run into. I mean, because he chose to remain incognito. So you're naturally going to have people who are like, who is this guy?
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, he to Lelouch's credit, he kind of had to, right, given his position.
Yeah.
If he wasn't the ex-prince that got rejected, you know, maybe he wouldn't have had to have laid low.
Right? Oh, yeah. Exactly. He could have just showed his face.
So they put the burees on Lelouch. They pull off the helmet, and it's C2.
Yeah.
In the
What's
suit.
She doing there?
And he's like, I didn't know Zero was a woman, right? Well, that's not.
It's funny you say that.
It's not who Zero is. Lelouch comes in, right? And holds a gun to the man's head, right? Zero does. He jumps from like the ceiling or something. I can't remember.
And Callan's the only one that kind of really knew that this was a ruse mm-hmm. because she's the like one of the only ones that have seen C2.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she's like, that's not Zero. I saw him with her the other day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Callan, why are you outing our boy like that? You should have been like this is Zero.
You got to be quiet for in real. These moments.
Yeah. She definitely would not be good in an interrogation. She said they're in the mountain. Right. So Zero pops out. Pulls the gun to this man and says, I know who you are. You're Taizo Kirihara.
Mm-hmm.
And Zero was in one of the burees.
Was in one of the burees.
Not the burees, the mechs, whatever those mechs were called. He had taken over one.
Oh, that's right. At the beginning, we missed that. Where he, because remember he used the eye, the...
On one of the guards or one of the guys or something like that?
The people actually taking him there, the driver.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, we forgot about that. So, and he's like, oh, how do you know his name? Blah, blah, blah. And they're going to shoot him, right? So,
which that was a badass move on C2's part.
Oh yeah,
to call Super his badass. Name out like that. What a show of power right there.
This whole scene was really cool.
The whole scene was cool. And then the Burai was already bent down from when Lelouch got out, and the people behind couldn't see. Only the two guards and the man could see, right? And he says, he's like, I'll show you my face, right? Now, Callan, keep in mind, Callan and the other resistance members can't see. And when he pulls off his helmet, Taizo recognized Lelouch.
Sure did.
He looked stunned to see him. He says, you're still alive? Right? And we see a flashback. Now, and this is, I mentioned this girl earlier, right?
And Brandon, just one second, too.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
One thing that we did forget to mention was when C2 revealed that his name was Kirihara. It is also revealed that, like, why he doesn't show his face, and that's because that he's also not Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to see, he says, he wants to see the destruction of Britannia because he can.
Mm-hmm. He's just a powerful guy.
That's a powerful guy mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a businessman, but I'm so powerful, I want to destroy this nation because I can.
Okay, Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of.
Stop it. Stop it.
He's like, I got Twitter over here, baby.
But so we see this flashback. And, you know, I think the old man paints himself as a bad guy, right? You know, I wanted to see the destruction because I can. But in this flashback, he's not actually, we don't know him personally yet, but he's holding or guarding Suzaku's father, and that little girl who we can only presume is Suzaku's sister, or maybe it's Taizo's daughter, right? And that's mm-hmm. the girl who we saw when Kyoto was meeting, the same right. girl who they were like, oh, you just have a crush on Zero. Right? Mm-hmm. She's older now. That's her, right?
Well, yeah, because he took Lelouch, Nunnally, Suzaku, and that girl in.
Mm-hmm.
Even Suzaku.
Yeah.
So this is very important.
And she's got purple hair, right? Mm. So we've talked about this before. Britannians typically have kooky hairstyles, right?
Right.
Whereas the more Japanese have more like brown, black, right? She has purple hair, and she ain't from Demon Slayer. So she's not gotta Shinobi. Be yeah she's gotta be a Britannian, right?
Yep.
So now she is wearing a kimono, you know, when we see her a little bit later on, or maybe she's like a shrine maiden, right? I even said that at one point because her attire is like
traditional
young shrine maiden. Yeah, very traditional. Yeah. But her hair is purple, or maybe it's black with purple streaks. I don't, you know, it looked purple.
I'm interesting to see, like, because if Suzaku and Lelouch were both taken in, then they both walked away from this experience with two different mindsets.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see the backstory on this.
Yeah.
And a little bit of that history, which I'm sure that we'll get.
You know what's funny about that flashback? So it was a still image, right? But if I paused it and I looked at Suzaku's face, and he looked almost disgusted to see Nunnally and Lelouch at that time. He had kind of like a scowl on his face. Whereas if you looked at his father, Taizo, and the young girl, they were kind of just like looking, mm-hmm. almost curious. But you see that Suzaku has a scowl on his face. Now, maybe it's just a young boy seeing another young boy. It's like, who is this, right? But I thought it was interesting to see that and to see where Suzaku and Lelouch are now. Right? Mm-hmm. Would he be scowling now if he knew the position that Taizo and Lulu are in? Right?
Was this their first time meeting?
Whose first time meeting?
Suzaku and Lelouch.
Oh, because we know that Suzaku has a relationship with Nunnally.
Well, no. I think that was their first time meeting because he took them in.
Okay.
And
I guess then that would make sense why he would have a scowl though too, because he was full 11 and these mm-hmm. individuals were like the kids of the king.
Oh, yeah. I was just about to bring that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I get that.
Yeah.
It's just, It was interesting that they showed Suzaku, the supposedly soft-hearted white knight who wants to preserve all forms of life.
Our boy Suzaku's got more darkness in him than he wants to admit.
Oh, yeah.
He's definitely Darth Vader-esque, right? He's getting there.
Got that Anakin in him.
He's got that dog in him. But I thought this scene was really, really interesting because Taizo, it's funny that how deep Lelouch's ties go, right? I know, I wasn't trying to rhyme that with Taizo, right?
That was
it's
a good
funny.
One.
I liked it. It's funny how deep his ties go with actual powerful individuals, right? Even on the Japanese side, right? Because he gets out of the Britannian life with the Emperor and stuff. And he gets sent over to Japan, but he's still with powerful individuals. He's not sent to like a halfway house or anything like that. He's sent to live with the former Japanese minister and a powerful businessman. So,
and how is this businessman at the center of the minister's children to come and to live with him and the king of Britannia's exiled children coming to live with him?
Because he's rich.
But he was involved in some shit is what I'm saying. He's well, more he's than just rich.
This right here. This. That's what I want to say. Because Lelouch's father is not an idiot, right? Look what he's done with Britannia. Now, we don't know if he's inherited all of that. I doubt it, right?
Right.
He's got that dog in him like Cornelia does, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
he's when they talk about him, it's always respect.
Yeah.
Always.
No Britannian is ever shitting on the king. People say what they want about Clovis, like, oh, he was like a pussy, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They talk shit on whoever they want to, but when people are talking about the king, it's a different way. You know what I'm saying? A different tone.
Likely he was the founder of the empire as it is today.
So, or someone who took the empire from one spot to an even greater height.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, with 80 kids, come on, dude.
I mean, look, it's like the Ottoman Empire, you know? They were doing good, and then Mehmed came in, and was like, oh, we're doing great, right?
Good old Mehmed.
Took down Constantinople.
Yep.
So it's probably that, to where there was a kind of already a Britannian government, and then existing. Then you had that Mehmed come in, right? And then he was like, oh, we're taking everything.
I mean, with 80 kids, I mean, you're shaping up to be like a young Genghis at that point. Like, you know, in 1,000 years, like, everybody's going to have a little bit of your DNA or something.
True.
Yeah.
So Taizo says that follow this man. He will help you. What was his exact quote? Follow this man, he will help you defeat Britannia or something like that. And he also says another thing. I quoted this because I thought, and this is a very simple quote, but he says, the flower planted 8 years ago has finally bloomed.
Oh.
Which is interesting that he said the flower planted. Why would the flower be planted if it was exiled?
I think that was the plant. I think this shows two different ways that Lelouch has been seen, right? Mm-hmm. So the king saw Lelouch as, you know, this bastard child, you know, that like from his Japanese mom that he had assassinated. Like, who gives a fuck about these two people? Mm-hmm. Exile them, you know, into where this individual, the leader of the Kyoto house, he sees Lelouch as a flower, something that was planted. And I think that moment was when Lelouch came into his custody.
Right. I disagree with you. Mm-hmm. I disagree with you.
Okay.
I don't think
it's that... Nothing new that Brandon disagrees with me.
But. Yeah, it's nothing new. I don't think that he sees that the flower was planted. I think that like you mentioned, you said this earlier. He has to have Taizo has powerful ties, and it wouldn't be. And even after they conquer Japan, right? He's still leading this company, mining Mount Fuji and stuff, right? And I'm assuming he didn't just all of a sudden inherit that. He was a big businessman before they installed the mine there, right? Did the emperor intentionally,
or was the businessman that put the mine there?
Oh, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Did the emperor intentionally plant Lelouch there. Hmm. Was it intentional because he wanted him to face adversity because he knew none of his other children would? We don't know of any other exiles, and it's probably unlikely that there were any other exiles, right?
But see, now we're getting into two different areas. So now we're saying that the king wants Lelouch to grow and then come back at him.
As a worthy successor.
The flower planted.
Oh, the rule of two type shit.
I mean, I can get on board with that if, like, based off the idea of, like, if we're saying this king is, like, so crazy, and if he doesn't care that Britannia is called Britannia, he just wants whoever takes over next to be more powerful than he is. Then I can understand the killing his mother, because this is going to give him something to hate, right? Give him some drive, putting him with a powerful individual that can help him in the future. That's going to help him grow, you know, making him live and, like, learn on his own and make his own successful feats. I can get that. But if the king doesn't want that, then I have to stick with that the Kyoto House leader saw Suzaku as more of a flower that he was able to plant and that is going to help him destroy Britannia. I do think it's probably one or the other. I can get with yours, given a couple, you know, things on the king's part.
But we don't know a bunch about the king, right?
No, we don't. That's why I'm saying it's easy for us to kind of formulate, you know, these things, because we're just kind of guessing.
But we do know about his children, right? And we know that he wasn't proud of Clovis, right? He didn't really care for Clovis.
I mean, who would be? Come on.
Clovis was a soft-hearted individual, and the king didn't really care for him. Keyword, soft-hearted.
Right.
You see, Cornelia, you know, she brags about having all these feats in battle and doing all this stuff. They probably pale in comparison to the emperor, because she's defending lands that they already have, right? Or squashing rebellions, not conquering countries, right?
The one key piece of information that I would like to know,
mm-hmm.
just, and you know, this would help us, it would get, tell us a lot, right?
He but says, like, Lelouch is too weak.
Why was his mother killed?
Now,
why was his mother killed, and who killed his mother? Because if the king says, I killed your mother to make you stronger,
right,
then mm-hmm. everything that you just said is proved by that statement. But if he just killed his mother because she was Japanese and he didn't want anything to do with it, then it's kind of, you know, I think it throws that out the window. We'll find this out eventually. I do think your point and what you're inferring is good, though.
Because my only thing is that the emperor, we know that the emperor, because they're fighting, right, to basically be next in line.
Right.
As strong as Cornelia is, she's not next in line. Far from it, right? We hear about a brother who has more military accolades than she has. We haven't seen him. We've only heard about him in passing in one of the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're gonna take Britannia, it's going to be survival of the fittest. It's kind of like that, right?
It's going to be with blood. Mm-hmm.
Like Game of Thrones type shit. Like, you really know, you're going to fight to earn this.
Exactly. So I'm just saying, the flower that bloomed is interesting to me, because it's so easy to think of it, oh, you know, the flower that was here, that was given to me, you know, has been bloomed, right? But the flower that was planted, right? If the U.S. sends a spy into a foreign country, right, we're planting them there, right?
Yeah. True.
I'm just saying, the fact it was planted, it implies a purpose to it. It was purposefully planted, right?
Right. The only thing that we don't know is, like, who is he referring to as the planter? I think, it, like you said, it's either the king that planted him there or mm-hmm. himself.
Right? Yeah.
He either sees himself as the planter or the king.
Well, he definitely wasn't the planter. Right, because the king said he was going to send him away to a family, and there's no way these people are like, I'll take him, right? He's just, the king's choosing to give him someone. Or maybe it wasn't the king that gave him there. Maybe it was an advisor that chose where this child goes that was loyal to Lelouch and his mother, right? Mm. So I guess, I, you know, where do we go from there? But That term planted has just stuck with me. I just couldn't not think about it. I was like, planted? Somebody is looking out for our boy because they knew possibly what he could become. And he has fulfilled what he could become, right? So that's all, right? I don't know. So interesting.
Yeah.
He also asks Lelouch at the very end if he plans on making peace through war, which Lelouch replies to with yes.
As he should.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unlike Suzaku, where he says, I'm going to make peace through no violence and not war, while he fights wars and kills people.
Through killing like, Elevens.
He's like, don't kill anybody, man. Spreads napalm. you know what I'm saying?
Make stop peace, it, not war.
Hey, arm those fighter jets for napalm.
Yeah.
You know, but
pulls that unsheathed sword, you know, dude. Like, what the hell?
So they, you know, after that point, Kyoto, he is like, you're gonna get our full backing. So what's the Black Knights gonna say now? Zero got the something. Full backing.
We're gonna do this again.
We're going to, yeah. Right? But I'm just saying, now they got unlimited resources, right? Well, or whatever Kyoto can give them, right? So
much more than they had.
You already know Taneki or whatever is going to still be like, it was my position. Please.
Not Taneki.
Come on.
But yeah, I love this episode. I love it. It was, I mean, we're an hour and 20 minutes in, and it's just there. This episode is meaty as hell.
Yeah.
So we're at the end now.
And then the final scene is, I'd say, a hitter in something I was not ready for, which then this takes the episode from being like really good, and then I came out of this episode being like best one
to great. This was the best episode so far. So we find out why Shirley is going to Naruto. She's there to ID a body, right? Now we don't know what body she's IDing, but
they're related.
They're related, and we do know who's accompanying her to see that body: her mother and someone else. Anyone know who that is? You know who I'm talking about?
I think I have it.
I can't remember her name. But anyway.
No, I just have her mother. Oh, is it Valletta?
Yeah, Valletta. Right? She's accompanying them. She was like, you know, I just wanted to see, you know, if you can identify these remains. And then she looks at Charlie's billfold. And she sees a picture of Lelouch in there as Shirley is identifying the body. And Violetta looks at that for a second, and she looks kind of hard because, remember, she saw the face of Lelouch in episode one.
Right.
Right? Then he got the power of the king. Or maybe it was episode two. I think it's one. Right?
She remembered that he looked like a student.
She remembered that he looked like a student. And
like we said.
And now we're seeing the limits of the power of the king, because she's looking at him, and you can see there's a vague recollection on
the gears are turning.
The gears are turning.
Austin, get out of here with this. We did this last episode.
Stop it.
You both owe each other two Cokes now. So this is a minor important scene, right? Or well, a really important scene, actually.
This is a really important scene.
Moving out, we see that Lelouch is like, okay. He had already said earlier he didn't know if he's going to make the concert, but he's like, I'm going to try to make it up to Shirley. So he's running to the concert in the rain, and he sees Shirley standing below a light post, covered in rain, right? No umbrella. Lelouch tilts the umbrella over her, and he's like, hey, what's wrong? Her father died. He got killed at Naruto.
Yeah. They because killed of the his landslide. Pops. Her pops.
Because of the landslide.
Not because it wasn't like an indirect, you know, like Lelouch killed him or like someone like went up to their father and like killed him, right?
No.
But it was through the order of the landslide that resulted in her father's death.
And you know what's funny? I feel like last episode we did see a minor character that we didn't see like get caught up in the landslide. Maybe I'm tripping and maybe that was her father, but I'm going to go back and watch that. But we're seeing the we've seen Lelouch make all these decisions, right? With the landslide, with you know, the raid on the hotel, the raid on a lot of these drug labs, right? We never see any consequences And now we're seeing the personal consequences of his actions. Lelouch hasn't had any personal consequences. It's like, oh, I'm doing stuff and it just kind of happens. Yeah, right? I'm taking dubs. And now he's personally affected someone very close to him while they're not in
someone
a relationship.
Someone he was there to go on a date with.
Exactly. Right?
And then not only is he there to go on a date with her, but in this moment when she breaks down in his arms in the rain, she kisses him and asks him for his help.
Mm-hmm. Ask him.
And he was the one that ordered Callan to cause the landslide.
Mm. And murdered.
This reminds me a lot of father. I don't know if you guys ever seen the movie The Town.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
How the robbers, like, they kidnap this chick and then, like, the one dude ends up, like, dating her and stuff. And I'm just like, when she finds out, right? Because surely we'll find out. I'm 99% sure that at some point she'll realize. Because
they always
eventually do. People are going to know that Lelouch is zero, right? And when that happens, you know, it's all going to come out. That's going to be some trauma right there.
Oh, for sure.
I wanted to date and love the man who ordered the attack that killed my father.
Yep.
And that's going to be something that he has to live with. And in this moment, the choice that he made, I mean, the episode ends here with them hugging and kissing in the rain, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I doubt that episode 13 is going to start off with him telling her it was me.
No,
which means that he's making the choice to keep this from her.
It's probably going to start off with him beating those cheeks.
Oh, yeah. It's just going to, you're just going to hear.
Unless we see Nina again.
Stop it.
Oh.
You know we hate Nina. Now,
picture of Yuffie and her kids.
Oh, no.
This is what I said earlier. I said this, right? And you all knew this was coming. But these characters, we have these minor developments with them. And you think, I don't care about Shirley, right? I don't care about Nina. I definitely don't care about Nina. But I don't care about these other characters, right? And then you see a scene like this, and then I realize just how much I actually did kind of care about Shirley. You know,
now that they're utilizing these characters for something impactful, yes.
But if you had no feeling towards Shirley, this scene would be like, you know, but her father's dead, right?
Agreed.
But we saw Shirley enough to be like, okay, she's a sweet character, right? She doesn't know anything.
It's just a normal.
She's not hurting anybody. She's not overly hateful to Elevens.
Mm-mm.
Like,
she's just a nice girl, and her father got murdered, and we're going to start seeing this more, the repercussions of Lelouch's actions through his schoolmates, right? Because that's the connection he has to the outside world. He has no other connection to the real world as Zero, because no one knows it's him. Right. Nothing can affect Zero, but something can affect Lelouch. And this is the first time something like this has affected him. I would say this is the biggest biggest incidents that occurred to Lelouch since his mother dying, right? Well, now we don't know what went on with Suzaku and Lelouch when they were children, so scrap that. That's probably bigger. We don't know
what
that is.
I'd probably say,
yet.
You know, since he's taken on the persona of Zero.
Since he's taken on the persona of Zero. And we're seeing how he's dealing with it, right? Yeah, this is a powerful scene. It's a powerful scene. And obviously, he's got friends in school, right? He's a sociopath, so as much of friends as he could have, right?
Right.
But
his relations.
Yeah.
Acquaintances.
This was a really, really good scene, and now we're getting to see that everything that the Black Knights is doing, it's not all peachy keen.
You know, I do believe that Lelouch cares more about, you know, some of his friends than he lets on. You know, he may seem as like this strategical, I'll do what I have to do.
Yeah.
But even though he was running late, it was raining, he didn't know if he was going to make it on time, he still went to meet her at that concert.
That's true.
He did. He definitely did. But I don't know.
I will say I would like to see a bit more of Lelouch's boy, his boy from the first couple episodes, his friend. I forget his name.
That he's like goofy. Yeah.
We haven't seen much of him.
No, we got to see a lot of more of the female cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there are a couple male characters that are thrown in there.
Hopefully, hopefully we do see more of him. And because, you know, we see Suzaku a lot and we know that they have a past relationship.
Right.
But, you know, that he Lelouch has new relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what happens with these.
As long as we get an episode just regarding Dirty Nina.
Oh, no.
No.
Dirty Nina on her dirty knees.
I think we should go ahead and, you know, begin closing this one out. We've already spent a long time on it, but...
You sure? It's only been 90 minutes.
Come on.
I gotta say, I don't think we could have made this episode any shorter. This episode was so jam-packed with things to discuss. And
it's brought out good discussions. I mean, we had a little, you know, disagreement in the beginning, which fueled, I think, good conversation for the rest of the episode.
I still disagree with you, but
and that's perfect. That's the cool thing about this is there's lots of ways to take it and see what's happening. And Code Geass really generates that conversation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to interpret. There's a lot to theorize.
So I guess, you know, final thoughts.
Final thoughts is I had a blast watching it. We learned a lot of good information. We got a lot of good character development, especially from like the high school slice of life side, which was really needed for the show because up until this point, it just kind of that part kind of felt like, you know, something that I've kind of got to sit through. I agree. Now this has made me feel like, okay, well, now I'm interested to see how else people are impacted as we keep moving forward.
Yeah, true.
I really don't care about his love interest or like if he dates anybody, but how real people are impacted, but with the choices that he's making, that I do want to see.
Mm. Yeah. Sweet. Well, Kes, you know, go ahead and close us out.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for sticking in with us here. I know this was a long one, our longest episode to date by far. Again, you guys know how we're doing it. We do 3 episodes a week coming out every Sunday. That's One Piece, Code Geass, and Yu Yu Hakusho. We watch the episode and then we get on here and we talk as in-depth as we can about it. As you can see on this one, it took us an hour and a half just to get through the 20-minute segment. So we'll see you guys next week and definitely tune in for more.
Bye-bye.
Teehee.
That's right. I'm Mike. Hey, I got my pants off. Michael, I ride a bicycle. That's Michael's. The shit right there, boy. Some boiled fucking hot dog. Kind of horny right now, to be honest.